everyone. It is another edition of This Is Whole Life. It's a special edition. And even though...
It's a special edition.
It's a special edition. And I'll tell you why. Okay. I'll tell you why. Last week, we're going to start with a little hype. We're going to start with nothing else at first. We're going to start with a little hype. Because I got to meet Brittany in person at church during first service. I was kind of out doing my thing, talking to people. And she's like, Randy. And I'm like, yes, but I don't know you. And she said, Brittany. And I'm like, oh, I owe you an email. She's like, yes, you do. Guess what?
What?
Brittany's been listening. She finally caught up with episode 400, and now she's back. You know, she's right on course. But what she's been missing, what's one thing that Ken would really hope that nobody listening was missing right now? Something we started this year that Ken, it was Ken's idea.
Oh, the game?
Yeah. She's like, how do I get into this game I keep hearing about?
Mm.
So, being the good...
player of the game.
Yeah. Right. And listening to the game master.
Right.
Brittany is now the proud owner of a...
Connected t-shirt.
A Connect t-shirt.
Very nice. Yeah. Welcome, Brittany.
Brittany, she's playing the game, and I can't reveal her game tag because I tried to help her, though.
That's a secret.
That's hard, though. For some people, that's really hard to come up with.
But, you know,
yeah, no,
the harder it was, you don't want her to have to change it later now because you gave it away. I mean, you all have your secret spy name. You give that up, you know, you could be found out, and that's problematic.
So if you two are wondering what we're talking about, what's the best way? You could just send an email. Right.
You send an email to Randy or the podcast, and I will allow at this point, if you send an email to Randy going, what is this game that you guys are talking about? I will allow Randy, we're far enough in the year at this point that I will allow him to send you back a
instructions.
Link. Just a link to where you need to go to figure this out.
To get this out. Okay.
But what is it? It's like wholelife.church/connect-the-game-sign-up.
Sign up.
Connect the game.
It's a long one. We should have rethought that one.
Or you can just email us and we'll give you the link.
But yes, email us and get the link. So Brittany, she had lots of compliments. And Ken,
it's a good-looking T-shirt.
It is a good-looking T-shirt.
Only one way to get it, too.
It's the only way to get it.
Like, I was just thinking this morning, we have a new staff member that came on board today.
Does not have one.
And does not have. I thought about putting it in the little goodie package of little gifts that we're giving her as we're getting started. I thought, no, she didn't earn it.
See, Brittany,
You got to earn it. Like my own family, or like my kids are at college and in high school away, and they're like, "Come on, Dad." And I'm like, "No, you got to show up." And that's just the way it is.
Brittany, did I tell you? Huh? Was I kidding? No, we take this real serious.
Having fun is serious business.
It is.
Did you hear that, folks? Guess who's back? It's Melanie.
Yay!
She's back. Although last week, Brittany, she's like, you and Ken do a great job. So I was like, hey.
Aw, thanks, Brittany.
Right? I was well, thank you for making us feel good about ourselves while Melanie was gone.
It doesn't get you any more t-shirts, but we appreciate it very much. Yeah.
Give yourself an extra 500 points for Game Master.
Oh, wow.
That was not the real Game Master speaking. You may not do so, but I will allow 50 points. So.
Oh, wow, an extra 50. Get caught up in a hurry. So, send an email.
Well, that's a good point. She just started, didn't she?
Yeah.
Give yourself 100 points, Brittany.
Oh, 100. 100. See, the Game Master is getting soft now. Here we go.
Well, I didn't listen to the podcast, but I have spies everywhere who did listen to the podcast, and they concurred with Brittany that you all. And I heard I got an honorable mention, or maybe a dishonorable mention. I don't know. I got a mention.
You did get a mention.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so,
thanks for thinking about it.
I was just going to let everybody hang out there and figure out, guess why Melanie's not here? And Ken was like, no, I think we should tell him. And I'm like, no. And he's like, yeah, we should tell him. I'm fine.
Especially the way he said it. The way Randy said it made no, she's not in prison. She's not.
She hasn't been fired. She's not on timeout.
Yeah.
Well, I just like to let people's imagination go for a little bit. And then I assume I'm going to get an email like, what happened to Pastor?
instrument.
I mean, that would have been a fun sort of game that could have happened. Like, what do you think happened? Yeah,
yeah. Oh!
And it happened
it's
right
fun.
After that episode.
It's
where
until
she
it's
said
not
this.
Fun.
Do you see why we miss Melanie? Look at those good ideas right there. I mean, that was a couple of hundred extra points for this game. Yeah. All right. So this week, I'm Randy, by the way. Melanie Bachman to my left.
That would
Ken
be me.
Wetmore to our right.
Randy, you're the communication director for the you know, Whole Life Church and
Ken's lead pastor.
Yeah. Yep. Melanie's worship pastor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now you know who we are.
Yeah. And if you've been following along, you know that we are in the middle of this Making the Connection series.
Yeah.
And connecting across. Now, every week, we've been talking about some.
We pick which landmine Ken's going to step on this week. What could go wrong? Literally, talk about religion. I mean, that's not a problem.
And so it just...
I didn't do politics, did I?
Yeah, I was going to say politics. Man. Left off the list.
How did that one... Did we kind of connect that to anything? I think
we're going to talk a little bit about that during election season. I think probably in October.
A few more landmines yet to come, then.
Yeah.
All right.
Talk about it a little bit more.
But, you know...
That's actually going to be fun. I'm actually tying that into a series on the Book of Daniel.
Oh,
yeah,
well, that sounds
fun.
Ominous.
Wow.
Daniel. I mean, well, Daniel in Revelation is always like,
you're always doubting me on
gloom.
These things.
But we had so much fun with Revelation.
We did.
Okay,
we did.
So Daniel's going to be fun
and,
too.
Exactly.
I'm sure it will be. I just, you know, like Revelation, I'd said before, I knew very little about Revelation. So for me, I'm a little apprehensive because I'm not sure like when, you know, when horns and things you're supposed to duck or jive or move to the side. I don't know those things. And you got, you know, so you have to bear in mind that you have a rookie over here when
okay,
it comes to Revelation.
Okay, you've convinced me it's time for another series on the Book of Revelation.
All right.
I guess the churches weren't quite enough.
Not enough. Well, see, then the churches, but I didn't know churches weren't connected to those things.
But I think, just shout out to Randy Roberts out at Loma Linda University Church. I have not listened to his series, but I think he just got done with a 7-part series on the Book of Revelation.
Yeah.
And I've heard people that I trust that said it was a really good series. And,
so,
I know Randy, and he's amazing. I'm lucky enough that once a year I get to hang out with him for a couple days, and just he's brilliant. And so, yeah.
Excellent.
So if you want to hear more about the Book of Daniel from somebody that I highly endorse, even though I haven't heard the series, so maybe I better be careful.
Daniel or Revelation?
Oh, did I say Daniel? I meant Revelation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So I'm sorry. Yeah.
So this week, I mean, we've talked about money. We've talked about socioeconomics. We've talked about all these different traps that we can get caught in. And this week, when it was religious beliefs, I was like, well, you know, maybe other than politics, maybe there's not a bigger landmine. And then Ken just...
Oh, I can think of one other, but we'll leave it.
Well, maybe. Well, yeah, maybe. Well, anyway, Ken came out swinging, and I just had to... he was not wrong when he said, some of you are not following where this story is going. Because
were you
like,
one of those that went, you,
no,
didn't, you, you
I
had
was
no
following,
idea? Where, oh.
Because I was just like, I felt like I was the only one in the front row going, oh,
yeah.
like this is where this one's going. And be careful on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Because apparently that's a good day to put your foot in your mouth.
Yeah. unless you're me and every day is a good day.
Well, touche, me too. But Ken, it was obviously an unlucky day for Ken, and your story was so spot on because most of the times I feel like we're not out to intentionally poke the bear with anyone. And maybe it's because we don't know what their beliefs are.
Yeah, that's
so,
it.
You know, we just don't know what the practices are. We don't know what the beliefs are.
And the funny thing is that we all assume that everybody else understands our belief system, too. It's like, that is the, so, you know, we don't know, but we expect that everybody's familiar with what Seventh-day Adventists believe. I mean, I'm very familiar with it, so why wouldn't everybody else?
Well, how can you read the Bible and not understand it? I mean, it's pretty clear.
Exactly.
Right?
Oh, it's
so,
just like crystal.
Yeah. And so as soon as he started saying, I was like, oh, I know where this is going. I grew up in a very Catholic community.
Yeah.
The whole, like the state of Wisconsin, early 1970s was very, very predominantly by like 90% type Catholic. So all the, you know, there was Catholic churches everywhere. All your friends that weren't Adventist were probably Catholic. And so it wasn't like we didn't.
Yeah, just the opposite.
Weren't familiar with those things.
Yeah,
and
just
then
the
in
opposite
Ken's
for
case,
me. I think there was one Catholic church in the entire county. And I don't know that they, I don't know how many people they had, but it was like, I grew up in Baptist country. Big time, Southern Baptist country, you know, Baptist church on every corner. And then so very Protestant area. And then, you know, then I grew up in this very cloistered Seventh-day Adventist community as well. You know, I you know, just no friends that weren't Seventh-day Adventists that I can remember, you know, until I think the first time I had any education with somebody who wasn't a Seventh-day Adventist, I think was when I was having to take driver's ed.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was, we did that short foray because it was free. And my parents, if there's anything an Adventist likes, it's something that's free. We're willing to go ahead and.
Wow. And so that's, anyway, that's a big brush you just painted us all with, but also not wrong.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But no, but I'm just talking about the community I grew up in. That's all I'm trying to say.
Oh, man.
So well, anyway, so yeah, so I had no idea. None.
Well, we grew up with, like, the kids in our, I say neighborhood, there were, what, four other houses that had kids under, or people in that house under 21 in two cornfields, basically four cornfields that met at the corner and went on a dead end street in the middle of nowhere. So, but like, they thought it was weird. On Wednesdays was the weird day. So maybe this is a thing because on Wednesdays we had Pathfinders.
Oh yeah.
So we would have to leave. So they would leave at like 3 o'clock.
What is Pathfinders? Just for those who might be tuning in and are maybe Catholic and don't know what we're talking about.
Think Boy Scouts of America.
Think about Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, kind of co-ed type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're the only ones that do it that way. Seems like, I don't know. I don't think anyone else is co-ed.
I think Awana's is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So we would have to go to our Pathfinder meeting on Wednesday night. We'd have to leave like 6 o'clock. So our friends are like, whoa, you know, even in summer, like, where are you going? Like, oh, you got to go to Pathfinders. Which Pathfinders? And then obviously give the explanation. For them, they would leave school and they wouldn't, because the problem was they would go from school to catechism. Mm-hmm. Which was an after-school activity, Bible study that the Catholics do. And so they would all have to go to catechism. They wouldn't get home until then. Of course, their parents could pick them up. So they would be getting home about the time we would have to leave. And it's like Wednesday was shot for plays. Yeah. Like, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't ride your bikes. You couldn't go play baseball. You couldn't do anything on Wednesday nights because everybody was busy. So that was that.
There you go.
So I think we kind of had an idea and we had seen.
And you know why they had Pathfinders on Wednesday nights in your town, right?
They probably had to counteract.
No.
Why on Wednesday?
It's because all the adults were having
prayer meeting upstairs. Yeah. That's true.
That's true. That's what it was.
Yeah, you're probably.
So they did that to keep the kids busy while they were having prayer meeting.
And that way your parents didn't have to drive all the way to town and back and then all the way to town and back.
And that's the real reason for Pathfinders.
That's right. Or prayer meeting.
At least where I grew up. We're not here because we have Whole Life has an amazing Pathfinder club and we don't meet
on
Wednesdays.
And they don't do Wednesdays.
They do
lots of days.
Parents in the North would revolt. It's like you're interrupting lay activities, so that would not, you can't have Pathfinders on Saturday afternoon after church. We're going home.
Yeah, I can think of other reasons too, but anyway.
Well, there's lots of reasons probably for someone. I don't know, but. So for me, I was like, oh man, I can see Ken is just like, I know where he's going with this.
Just getting ready to wipe the ash from Ash Wednesday off of one of the faithful's foreheads.
I will admit, even growing up in that, I knew what Ash Wednesday was. And because you would see it on Ash Wednesday, no matter where you went, if you were outside in the community, you would see somebody with the ash cross on their forehead. Just walking around. So everybody knew what it was, but I don't know if I know what's it symbolic of? Like, what's it mean? I don't know. I've never like looked it up and said, hey, what is Ash Wednesday?
Yeah, it's the beginning of as we're moving into the passion of Christ and into his sufferings and so on and so forth. So on Sunday, you have Palm Sunday, right?
Right. Yep.
So that's where Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And so at least on Guam, I can't speak for other places and not being Catholic, I don't know, but at least on Guam, they would have a big a big celebration on Palm Sunday at the churches, and they would have palm branches that they would wave, and there was a big thing.
Like the triumphant entry into Jerusalem.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. And so what they would do is they would take all those palm branches that they cut down, and they would wait a day or two, and then on Tuesday they would burn the palm branches, and they would take the ash from that and then mix it with water. And that's what you used on Ash Wednesday to put the sign of the cross on adherents' foreheads, right? And so, you know, it's a part of symbolizing taking on that suffering of Christ, you know, and you know, sometimes the glory turns to ashes. So there's some of that playing out in all of that. And again, I am the wrong, I don't know enough Catholic theology to just enough to embarrass myself. But the thing is, what happened was, for those of you who didn't maybe hear the sermon just yet, I tried to wipe the ash off of my buddy who is a devout Catholic. And on Guam, 95% of the island is Catholic. And so I tried to wipe the ash off his forehead on Ash Wednesday because I thought he just had dirt on his forehead. And he was pretty upset. Fortunately, I didn't get at it. He smacked my hand in time. But basically what Mike said to me is, he said, well, I get up really early. Like, I think he got up at 3:30 or 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah,
to be at the church early, because apparently the earlier you get there, the better the ash is, because, you know, early on there's plenty of it. And so the priest will put a nice, you know, smear there with the sign of the cross. But as the day goes by and they start running out of ash, they have to add more and more water to it. So now you have more of a watery, then it really does look like maybe you just have some dirt on it. I should have known. I mean, it was a nice thick.
So this was important to Mike, that he got super there important. Early.
Oh, yeah. Super. He wanted the good ash. Yeah. He goes, I did not get up early, so you can take that off. So wow. Anyway. So, yeah, it was definitely I learned something that day.
Man. Do you think there's anything about, it was just, I mean, I'm sure there is, but what do you think the equivalent would be to Adventism? I mean, not that I don't think we do anything specifically.
I will tell you the one that people absolutely do not get is foot washing.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like, if you have somebody who is not Seventh-day Adventist and comes to a Seventh-day Adventist church on a communion Sabbath, the communion doesn't weird them out, because that's kind of a normal part of most of Christianity. But what will really take people by surprise, and honestly, there's plenty of Adventists who I know specifically won't show up if they think that they're going to be required to do foot washing, which to me, I understand where that's coming from, but sure. I also wish that's part of, for me, the beauty of that particular symbolism. But I grew up with it, and I love the symbolism. It means something to me. But for people who aren't, it's just a really weird ritual that, why would anybody touch anybody's feet? Why would, you know, where is that coming from? Because that's just not something that's really widely practiced.
The thing I liked about that, just as a side, going back to my childhood, which I always was like, that's kind of weird too. Yeah. And, you know, the eating the bread and the wine and the body and the blood. And as a kid, maybe it's a little bit above what we can handle. But I always thought it was a cool thing for foot washing, because people that you didn't get to see, it wasn't like here at Whole Life where people are working and pitching in and volunteering like in a really big way, but in a more old fashioned church. I mean, yes, you have your deacons that pick up the offering. You've got but they're kind of in the background. You kind of know who they are. But here was like, you know, you would see the men rolling up their sleeves, you know, taking the tie off, taking the jacket off, and people that you only ever saw at church as this person with a suit on. Even the pastor would, you know, get down and dirty, and I just always thought that was kind of cool, because to me it felt like, oh, we're kind of taking off the armor, and this is who the real person is in this whole thing. I always thought that part was kind of cool, even though I did think the foot washing.
I love it, because it's the essence of Christ. It's servant
I like it.
Doing gross things type of thing. It's, you know, that Christ was not ashamed to get in and do things that were not pleasant, that needed to be done. And anyway, so there's just a lot of beauty to me in celebrating that.
Our family likes to do it together. It's a kind of a cool tradition that we've done. All right, so I think we could probably go into the 40 or 50 ways to most easily offend those that are not of our faith.
Oh yeah, no shortage.
And tell more stories. But what I want to do with the time that we have, because we had a lot of questions and comments and a lot of really good questions that I want to get to. And then if there's anything we haven't covered before we have to move out today, then we'll circle back and go around. Asking wants to know, if God is God and therefore beyond our understanding, how can we hold our beliefs humbly, realizing no one has it fully right and every faith may have some insight?
Yeah, I was hoping that was something that
somebody might ask.
And it was one of the, I don't know how many people caught it, but one of the things we were talking about is that if you believe that truth is a person, and that person, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, if you believe Jesus' words as a Christian, then truth isn't just a static set of do this, don't do this, don't do that. Truth is a person. And when we look at truth as being a bullet point list of things, it becomes very one-dimensional. And so that means that only one only one denomination, only one religion can have anything, because we've got this. Whereas if you start looking at truth as a person, you can recognize that there, my wife probably knows me better at this point in my life than my parents do. But my parents know things about me that my wife doesn't know. My kids know things about me that I think that maybe would be a different viewpoint than my wife has. And there are things, Randy, that you work with me every day. There are things about me that you see about me that maybe my wife and my parents wouldn't see. Now, obviously, I would say that my wife knows me better than anybody. So that's probably the first place you'd want to go if you wanted to know more about me.
Sure, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you couldn't learn something from Randy, who knows me maybe a little less than my parents and my wife and my kids. But you see a work aspect of me. And so if you start understanding that, looking at God that way, what that means is that there are other religions that may not, from my perspective, have as much understanding of who God is and what God wants, but they do see an aspect of God that maybe sometimes we may not see as clearly from where they're at. And so if that's the case, then it doesn't do anything to diminish. I'm happy with my faith, and doesn't mean I want to go find another faith, but it does mean that maybe I can be humble and say maybe I can learn something. And I think that the Magi that we talked about back at Christmas time are a great example of this. You know, the Jewish religious leaders completely blew them off when they showed up in town. I mean, what could these pagans possibly have to teach us about the coming of the Messiah? I mean, what could they possibly, there's a king. Yeah, this is the right time, but they're not going to tell us anything. And I think that sometimes in Christianity, in Seventh-day Adventism, we tend to blow things off and be like, what could that person ever teach me about God? We have the truth.
Sure.
Well, sure, you have the truth as it is in Jesus. You have Jesus, but that doesn't mean there aren't things you can't learn.
You know, one of the best things that ever happened to me was going to an ecumenical seminary where I was attending class with a lot of people from a lot of different denominations. And then going to Vanderbilt, where I had students in my classes who were, who are atheist or, Jewish or Muslim. And one of the things that I think that I learned was when you spend a lot of time in a bubble and you're part of the in-group, then there's also a definition that you give to different out-groups. And what I found out was that some of the definitions and some of the things that I learned to believe about what I thought other people believed were actually not accurate. So shocking.
I don't know if I believe this.
So when I found myself in classrooms with people and having these deep theological discussions and understanding, that's why you believe that. It's not anything like what I thought about what you believed. So that was a great experience. And that's actually where I first also encountered someone with ash on their forehead. And actually it's not just a Catholic thing. There are Protestant denominations that do it as well. And
really?
And it also marks the first day of Lent.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because then it's, well, Wisconsin, that's a huge thing because like Friday fish fries is like a big deal. No, and people like start Lent like, well, all right, we're going, we're starting early. I remember that.
We're
now.
Sacrificing this particular this. Thing for this period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is one of the, it's really easy to win a theological argument when you're fighting from the same viewpoint with the other. You know, we'll do this sometimes. We're like, why do we believe this? And you have that discussion with another person that believes exactly the same thing, mm-hmm. and they put up a pretty weak fight in defense, even at their best, because they don't really believe it. They're trying to defend something they don't really believe. You start talking to somebody who really genuinely believes something, and you'll learn some things. Mm-hmm. At Madison Campus Church where I pastored, I had a wonderful, wonderful person who attended nearly every week, and he is an Old Testament theologian, brilliant Old Testament theologian, works for a well-recognized organization here within this in the United States, and he was a Baptist pastor, and he happened to be married to one of our Seventh-day Adventist church members, and he would come and sit in church, and he was lovely. He would often give me some really great feedback and be very positive. And I remember one day I characterized people of his tribe a certain way, and he gently said, "Hey, could I talk with you later?" And we did. He said, "You know, here's you said this, but that's not exactly. You're not really you're." Misconstruing what we believe in this way. Yeah, you're not 100% wrong, but you're not taking this, and this into account. And he actually wrote a really interesting paper, I think, for academic journal of some kind on what happens to a person when they die. And he really tore into Adventists and what we believe happens to a person when they die. And what I loved about him is, you know how humble he was? He sent the paper to me and said, "I'd love to hear your feedback on this. Tell me what I'm not getting right." Mm. And we had a great conversation about it. He didn't really change his mind on things, and I didn't really change my mind on things. But you know what? I saw his viewpoint in a very different way than I'd ever seen it before, with some of the passages that the way that he chose to exegete those verses, and exegesis is basically the way you take a text and interpret it. But the way that he did it was very different than the way my Adventist professors had done it. But I saw where he was coming from too. It was interesting.
Well, and what a great example of the kind of generosity of, you know, I mean, that was him connecting across with you, which is a really cool thing.
Ray, if you're listening, you're amazing. Great guy.
Yeah, that's way helpful. Hey, is it, I'm going to make sure I'm trying to get this name. It's Aracelis, who said, "Amen, Pastor Ken. Nothing is worse than when your own Adventist family is mean to you.
Oh, no.
That evilness kept me away from coming to church for so long. The Lord gave me the strength to stand up to them with the help and healing I received with the help of Whole Life Church." Hmm. Well, man, I'm glad that in whatever way that was, that we were able to be helpful.
Very happy to hear that, Aracelis.
Yeah. And I thought the other was Randy R. said, "How do we relate to those within our own faith who believe differently?" Kind of going into that the same way. And I wonder if Anonymous answered that by saying the first way to begin to respect different forms of spirituality is to learn about them, even if you don't agree with someone's belief or practices, respect them and love them. And I think that applies to Adventism or whatever your tribe is, because there is such a difference in even amongst ourselves what we believe, which makes it really difficult.
Although the difference in what we believe across our denomination is pretty minuscule. I mean, we think we have these big arguments. They're really not that. They're splitting hairs at time, I think.
Yeah, I think that there are some big conversations that our denomination needs to have that are actually kind of big deals.
A lot. Yes, I think there are. I think those are not usually the conversations we're having. The ones that I think we wind up, because I think it feels a lot safer to argue about something where we're, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin versus what do we do with this particular issue that could potentially fracture our church.
Right.
Yeah. Well, those end up being tough ones, especially if someone, the word there being mean to you, and you know, that's a lack of respect. That's a lack of empathy. That's a lack of love in general. And that is hard, though, especially if it's someone within your own tribe, maybe your own family that you're having to deal with. That's tough because that requires a level of forgiveness that I don't think many of us are ready to say, oh, well, that's okay, Pumpkin. I totally forgive you for just, you know, mowing me down and then backing up over me and then calling me a name on your way out the door, which, you know, I think we've all had some degree of that with something we believe or we don't believe or we've had to go through in the past. So that's a tough one. Mm. I don't know that there's any real good other than Lord, help me not be spiteful or hateful and do the best I can.
Yeah. Well, and that goes, this sounds like there are some deeper levels of things happening there in terms of, yeah. of like you said, respect and relationship that maybe go beyond just yeah. basic belief differences. Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Aaron wanted to know, is the Old Testament a fortress or village model? It seems fortress. Was it the Israelites that misinterpreted God's instructions, or was it more fortress because God asked it to be that way for their best at the time, or some other reason, or am I misinterpreting it as fortress and it was actually village?
Yeah, what a great question, a very perceptive one to ask. And I think that there are times in your life that you want to do things a little bit differently than at other times in your life. For instance, when you have a child between the ages of 1 and 5, that's not the time where I'm going to take them and introduce them to every religion on earth. As a parent, I want to teach them what I believe. That's what I'm going to do. And,
sure.
and I'm going to put that there. That's the way I choose to do it. There might be other parents who choose to do something different. But between the ages of 1 and 5, your kid's brain is very malleable. And basically, science has shown over and over that basically the values that you put into somebody between the ages of 0 and 5 are the ones that really stick with them for life. And I know this because my wife has done a lot of research on this as an early childhood educator. And it's so when I see Jesus or God bringing the Israelites out of Egypt, I see God bringing a group of people who he was trying to teach some values to, teach some things that were important to him. What becomes interesting is when you start reading through the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Zechariah, one of the things that they chastise the Israelites for doing is not being a blessing to the nations. And that phrase is used quite a bit. And I meant you to be a blessing to the nations. Well, what does that mean? I think what it means is that God had always intended for the Israelites to establish a kingdom, if you will, a theocracy, that would be a model of what it would look like if you followed God's law and did things God's way, and that it would be such a beautiful thing that it would attract the other nations to want to have that same experience. And so I believe that perhaps there was a while that God was like, yes, there's a learning period here that we've got going on.
Sure.
But then after that, I don't think what tends to happen, I believe, is we tend to take kids and we tend to do the same thing ourselves, is we never leave the fortress. We never grow up. We're just constant children that need to be sheltered and hidden from everything else. And that says something sad about our faith, because I believe a mature faith can very much go out and have friendships and conversations with people who don't believe the same thing that you do.
Yeah.
I think it's actually a sign of immaturity to be unable to do that. And that's okay, because there are periods where we aren't, you know, children, you know, if you're 5 years old, you're 5 years old. That's where your maturity is. But you don't want to stay 5 years old. And I fear that sometimes in Christianity and Seventh-day Adventism, we stay 5. We're like, we got to hide. We can't come out. We daren't talk about somebody who believes something different because it might change our minds about things. Well, what does that say? Does it say that we've really taken the time to think through what we believe, or does it say that we're just not particularly sure if we have the truth?
Sure.
And it really bugs me. I'll just take this one step. Sorry, Randy. I know you want it.
No,
it really bugs me when we will have when we will have leaders that will basically say, listen to me, but don't listen to anybody else. Well, what kind of world is that where you say, basically, I don't trust you enough to listen to anybody but me? To me, that's kind of cult behavior.
Well, that's a sociological thing where if you have, if it's like I've been studying this or something, where if you do have an in-group and you're trying to protect the identity of the in-group, one of the ways to do that is to create a dividing line between you and others. And in order to protect the survival of the group, you have to set up those kinds of barriers. But like you said, that's when you are not trusting the people that are in your group. And also there's another, I mean, what you were talking about in terms of maturity, James Fowler wrote a book called Becoming Adult, Becoming Christian, where he talks about the different stages of faith in relation to adult or human development theory. And it's really interesting because if you look, and he tries not to hierarchicalize, there we go, those different stages, but we do kind of go from a stage of having to think of things very concretely, very black and white. But then as we mature, we're able to see some of the nuances and we're even able to hold some things in tension.
The barrier thing that we, you know, Melanie was talking about, that all sounds nice. Let's create a barrier to keep people inside. The problem is that barrier keeps other people outside.
Yeah.
As well. And that's the other problem with it, is that while you're so busy trying to keep a few people inside, you're keeping a lot of people from being a part of that group. And the other part is it just goes against the theology that's very important in my understanding of Seventh-day Adventists, and that's the freedom of free will.
Yeah.
And the ability for people to make their own choices and to think for themselves. It goes back to the whole Reformation where we basically said, look, you don't need a pastor or a priest or a cleric of some kind to interpret the Bible for you. You can do it yourself. Sure. You can look at the Bible and you can decide what God is saying to you. And it really takes us in a very different direction than the Reformation when we start telling people inside of our churches, no, you just have to listen to those of us who are trained theologians and we'll let you know what God, that's a very different direction than what Protestantism has been. And it's no different doing it as a Seventh-day Adventist than it is as a Catholic or a Baptist. If you're saying, no, listen to the trained professionals, you're moving away from where the Reformation was at.
Well, and for the record, I was not recommending that phenomenon. I was just describing.
No. I wasn't. I'm sorry if I came. No, I know you were describing it. Yeah,
but
for sure.
And I think it demonizes everything that somebody else believes based on, oh, you're this, so Ash Wednesday is dumb, or this practice is dumb, or Palm Sunday. When in actuality, I mean, thinking about and remembering the things, it's no different than how someone might look, like you said, foot washing or communion. That's just something that we happen to hold really dear, something that Jesus did. But I mean, Palm Sunday was, you know, Jesus coming into the city, to the palm branches and the accolades and, you know, doing those. So sometimes I feel like we protect ourselves from things that we don't need to, that don't need protection from. It might be someone else's practice. It may be something that you're not, it's a practice. I don't think it's a theological debate that, you know, someone that's doing X, Y, or Z is necessarily more holy, less holy, or anything else. It's just a practice. And I think we just pull those so far over the, because it's a certain group, then it's like, well, that's got to be bad then, of course. Okay, we are almost out of time, but we're almost out of questions, so this is working out pretty well. So the one I wanted to get to here is, I learned so much from this message. This is Mama Doc speaking. We are not a club. We are a village looking for the coming of Jesus. Other villages also are. Every religion in the past will probably have someone in heaven, and they will probably outnumber the SDAs. There'll be a shaking out. Explain how we can trust less in SDA name and more in Jesus being Christians than being correct. So I think, you know, does this go back to we have sheep in many pastures? Is that what we're talking about here, do you think?
Well, you know, Mama Doc, great point, firstly, fantastic. And I love what you said. How can we trust less in the SDA name and more in Jesus? There's only, last time I read my Bible, there's only one name under heaven in which we can find salvation. That name is Jesus, period. Yeah. And stop, you know, drop the mic. So, so the first thing is that we put our faith in the truth as it is
in that person,
in Jesus, that is where we put our faith. And then we get to know Jesus. We get to know God, and there's so many different ways. We get to know God through the Bible. We get to know God through prayer. We get to know God through a variety of other spiritual practices, through nature, through others. And so these are all things I just encourage you to do. I mean, just, you know, don't search for a denomination. Search for Jesus.
Yeah.
Search for Jesus and who Jesus is, and to know Jesus a little bit better. Again, going back to that analogy all the way at the very beginning, if Jesus is a person, there's always more to know. Always know no more. You know, as much as I've been married for 25 years to Rochelle, there's always more to find out about her, more about our relationship that I'm learning about and that I'm trying to grow in. And so the same thing I think is true with Christ. I think that there's just always more to know, more to understand.
Well, and I think it's also one test that you can give yourself is if you are in a denomination and the denomination believes something or promotes something that you know is not correct or is wrong, if your allegiance is to the denomination versus whether your allegiance is to what you believe is the truth, that can be a good test.
Oof, yeah. Yeah. Well, and Anonymous said, when connecting across religions or anything, race, economic hurt, all the things we've talked about, God needs to be front and center.
Amen.
And Mama Doc said at the end, rephrasing, how can we be more loving Christians without compromising the word of God? And I think those two go together, because if God is front and center, at least the God that you know, the God that you worship, the God that you study the Bible to know more of, that, you know, Jesus to always, you know, always something new to learn, then I think that's, to me, that creates a little intrigue than it does to disconnect. All right, two more really quick. These were from Gabby, whose friends, some friends of hers had been watching and had asked, and she lost her phone at church.
Gabby was our online host.
Lost her phone, and she's recollecting these the best that she could, because somehow they got deleted in this process. Really weird. Anyway, do I need to be incredibly strong in my faith to have conversations with those of different beliefs? Will I have a harder time with judgment and understanding if my faith is in a rocky place?
What a good question. Again, I love these questions. So good. So here's what I would say. I have found, and for me, so what I've found is that my faith has actually grown through these conversations. It's matured. At times it's changed. But I think these conversations are really important, and you don't, if you're not having them, you're not growing, right? And so I think you need to be discussing and thinking about things. And so what I find a lot of times is that people think, well, I'm just going to wait until I have time to get a, you know, Master's of Divinity, and then I'll be more ready to have this conversation, or I'm going to do that. My encouragement to you is, come start having the conversation. You know, we've started doing, I'm just wrapping up a series during our Sabbath school time here at Whole Life on Seventh-day Adventist beliefs. I've had some great conversations in there. The people that come don't agree with everything that I have to share, and that's fantastic. It have been really fun conversations. And what I find is the more of those conversations that I have, the more I understand why I believe what I believe, and I also see why some of the things I believe are really hard for other people to understand. Yeah. And so my encouragement to you is, know what you believe.
Yeah.
And start taking a hard look at it, and then have conversations with other people that are going to challenge you to deepen those beliefs and understanding what you believe.
Well, and let's take the fear out of that judgment word. That judgment word hanging over the top of your head when you're trying to think through these things is not, I don't think it's helpful. I think that when you are out from underneath the fear of judgment, then you have the freedom to be right. You have the freedom to be wrong. You have the freedom to explore. You have the freedom to grow. And I just don't think that there's a very fertile place for growth in the shadow of judgment.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Man, that's... I like the way you worded it better. I've often felt that way, and I'll agree with Ken real quick too, that that was something that until you have those hard conversations, and for me, it was one of my friends. We both grew, they were Catholic, had become Adventist, and then kind of non-denominational, wasn't really sure where they fit in, and had some tough conversations where it's like, you know, I don't believe this. And I know it's what we were taught in, you know, grade school and in church and Sabbath school, all that. I don't believe it. And I think this is a more accurate portrayal of what God wants from us. And then when, like Ken said, you get that extra picture and you're like, man, I'm not sure. I don't believe that either now. And it doesn't always last forever. Sometimes it's pieces and parts, but then you find something else that's totally unrelated. And then, but it is related. You don't see it until later and you go, wow, I really like, this feels like home to me. Then you feel like this is what God's been trying to tell me through different pieces and people. And if you don't have those conversations, it's only whatever you've heard, whatever you've read in your own understanding, nothing to challenge. Honestly, that's a little boring to me also. Like, I don't feel like there's any challenge whatsoever. All right. This is a final question. We're not going to answer it here because I think Ken did a great job answering it in his message, but I want to get to it real quick. It said, as someone who is a medical professional, I find it difficult to refrain from giving life supportive measures to those who do not want it for religious reasons. I feel like I'm going against my own ethics and beliefs. How do I go about respecting others' beliefs while feeling like I am going against my own? What makes theirs more important than mine?
I do want to say something about that because I saw that question. I really wanted to answer it.
Okay.
So in the particular question that you're asking, what makes theirs more than yours is that you're working on their body, not yours.
Ooh, yeah.
And that's a huge difference. Yes, you are a medical practitioner. Yes, you do have a set of ethics. But as a medical practitioner, I know that you're well aware that part of that ethics is respecting the person that you're working on and their choices and the choice that they get to make. I remember one of the more difficult things that I learned just as learning CPR was that if somebody said they did not want CPR, and usually you can't get CPR if you're actually, but if somebody says, if you notice somebody's in distress and you say, can I help you? And they're like, no, I don't want help. My instructor told me you wait till they pass out and then you do the CPR at that point. And you're not supposed to do anything to that point. And that's a hard thing to do when you know that you can help somebody and they refuse it. That's a hard thing to do. But particularly when it comes to somebody's religious beliefs, that's a very... you're working with people and their belief and their sense of well-being. You know, I used Jehovah's Witness as an example.
I thought that was a great...
But, you know, when I talked with the Jehovah's Witnesses that would come in and teach my class their belief systems and what they... so that the class would understand what was going on, you know, they really... for them, it is a massive violation of their personal autonomy to receive a blood transfusion, and the willingness to receive one means that they're not a Jehovah's Witness, because that's what the class would be like. Well, but if you received it, if you're like, I'm dying, I'll take it, go ahead and give it to me, and then go back and say I'm sorry for it, and they're like, no, then you're not Jehovah's Witness. You don't do that. They consider it a very big violation of their personal autonomy. And as hard as that is, and like I said, it's one thing when as a medical professional, you're dealing with another person's choice. It's another thing when you're working with a child and their parents are making a choice for them. And you're like, but that's not, I want to give this child blood. Who says that kid doesn't want to live just because mom and dad don't want the child to get the... and this is real stuff that my classes would actually have dealt with. And that's a really hard thing. In a lot of cases, that's what you have an ethics board for. That's what the people will go to court over this, medical professionals. But there is a system for doing it. And as much as that one bugs me, what doesn't bug me is I don't want people coming and doing things to my kids that I don't want them doing. I don't want... that kind of thing happening to my kids. And so if we want freedom, we have to give freedom. Even, but that's again why we have, I think, as flawed as our justice system may be, I think it, one of the good things that it, very much good things about it, is it does a pretty good job with this of protecting the rights of a child and a parent and trying to figure out how to, because there are cases where the court will intervene and say, no, this is what's going to need to happen for the child. And anyway, so as a medical professional, I think it's a really good question because it's a really hard thing to sit there and know that you can help somebody and not be allowed to. That's, it is devastating. You know, I remember hearing about, you know, a mother that was, you know, giving birth, just needed transfusion. That's all she needed to, and she would have been fine. She would have been home the next day. And because of religious beliefs, refused it, died right there. Didn't have to. Left a baby with a father, no mom. That's difficult as a medical professional. I don't want to gloss over that and act like that's something easy for you to deal with, because it's not. At the same time, we're dealing with people's personal freedom, and at least within the Western ethic that we have here and the American ethic, we put a high degree of worth on individual freedoms and people having the right to make decisions, even bad decisions for themselves.
I always think to myself, think of one that you hold the most dear, even of any of your religious beliefs. And I mean, obviously not all those would come into a medical situation, but in any kind of situation that would require you to just say, like you were mentioning, well, it's okay, do it now, but then say, oh, okay, I'm going to go back to the way I was doing it. And when you really stop and think about that, that's a huge deal that you would be able to do that, especially when it, and then like you, you know, you bring the kids into it, and that makes it even more difficult. But I just feel like that's, and I'm not a medical professional, so it's hard to speak into that as well. But
well, Randy, I have to jet here, yes, but I do want to mention potluck this week at Whole Life, where we've got a really special service because we're going to be talking about abilities this week. And we're going to be talking about those who have special abilities, those who, you know, there's the word disability. We're going to be talking about all these different things and how do we connect across people with a wide range of abilities. So
I think you're going to do great on this one.
Wow, you're jinxing me now, aren't you? This one's gonna be hard. I don't know how you're gonna do. I wouldn't want to be you doing this one. So now I feel like really scared. Now, you can't win, can you, Randy?
I was just saying.
You got a little piece of it ahead of time, though.
Yeah, we mentioned in Max and Randy this past week. We got a little taste of it, and I'm excited for you guys to hear this message.
So we'll be doing that. So we have. Oh my word! You don't want to miss the videos that Stanley has put together for this week. They're going to be terrific. It is going to be such a good church service. And then, like I said, potluck afterwards. So
four-string quartet.
Yeah.
When's the last time?
You're going to have, it's food and food and great music.
So if there's that special someone that you've been wanting to ask out for dinner, this is this is low key, but also kind of upscale with the four-string quartet.
Ask you to please bring enough food for yourself and the other people that you're bringing along with you, that just so absolutely, that we can feed everybody. As I said on Sabbath, I haven't gotten to being able to multiply loaves and fishes yet, and I don't really want to try that out. So
yeah, no.
So you know, bring enough for you and your family, but please do come. This is a great opportunity to connect. We're also going to get to meet Aubrey Taupe, our new Children and Family Ministries pastor. Yay. She's fantastic. We just had a great first day on the job with her today. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to meet her. So be there.
Aubrey's the reason we're running tight on. So you can blame Aubrey when you see her. Be like, hey, I missed out on like a couple minutes of podcast because like you were here taking up their time. No. What you do is you go up to Aubrey and you give her, she's a hugger. We found that out today. She's a hugger and she would love to get a hug from you. Just say, hey, Aubrey, welcome to Whole Life Church. We're so happy that you're here and trust us as staff. I think you're going to be loving the fact that Aubrey's here.
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything else? I mean, we met this morning, but I'm just trying to remember if there was anything else we were supposed to talk about, but I don't think there was.
I feel like that covers it.
I feel like the potluck, because they've put a ton of work into this potluck.
Yes.
And we, Max and Randy, were supposed to talk about potluck last week, but somehow we had tons of stuff. Every week there's stuff to talk about, but it should have been another announcement. But it's been kind of everywhere. You'll find another social media update on as you hear it. Watch for it today. You will see that, and as a reminder, but bring food.
Lots of food.
Bring a smile, because let me tell you, if you've never done potluck at Whole Life, you've missed out on some serious international cuisine. The last potluck, I literally was like, I've never been so full in my life, and there was still food because everyone just pitched in and brought a ton of food, but it was just amazing. There was so many good things. Like when you take a scoop, there's 12 scoops on a regular paper plate, and you're like, oh, where did I get that scoop from? Which line did I go in? Because I think if there's some more, I'm going to go back after everyone's got through and see if there's a little bit left. Oh, it was so good. Mm. And it was so good to have Melanie back. Yay.
I'm glad to be back. I missed you guys.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've missed you. The podcast, you know, we didn't have Justin because that just, you know, that didn't really work out. And I don't know how I didn't think of it earlier. But Freud was great. Freud did a great job preaching and the podcast. Mm. Got lots of compliments on his message and his episode. So
awesome.
I think we can all breathe. Melanie's back. I feel better already. I came to work feeling better this morning already. I was like, Melanie's going to be back today. Is she? Well, I don't know. Although, and then, you know, if you all see Lynn, Melanie's mom, you see her and Rod sitting in the worship center, usually in the center, left of center, if you're walking up to the stage, 5-10 rows back, give her a big hug. She worked her heart out.
She came in and
she was
stepped
awesome.
In and did a lot of my job for me while I was busy working on other things. And my dad has been really awesome managing some major projects around my house.
That is awesome.
So
what do you do without good parents like that?
I have
right?
awesome parents.
You do. Yes. And so we've already kind of adopted Lynn here. Like, she's already de facto staff. I mean, you're not going to find her on the website, maybe. But we, you know, it was just like, wow, how awesome is this, that when you lose someone that does as much and does it as well as Melanie does, and then she stepped in and was just like, just asked all the right questions. Mm-hmm. Just she's a hard worker, and she's a ton of fun to be around.
Yeah, I think I'll keep her.
Yeah, I would. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week. But again, don't forget potluck. Bring the food, but come. Bring friends. And, you know, even if it means, you know, on Friday night, just stopping at Publix and, you know, getting some potato salad and some dinner rolls or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, we're not picky. We just would rather see you here. And if a little food can come with you, that's amazing. Feed them, because Ken... I'm not confident Ken does anything with five loaves and two fishes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or a box of potato chips or anything else for that matter. Nah, it's not his thing. So let's not put him to it.
Well, let's not test it out this time.
Maybe in the future. We'll see how it goes. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. Have a great week.